Can you hear my cat meowing in the background?
No.
No, he just stopped.
Can you hear my... I didn't have anything. Sorry.
Your swimming pool?
Can you hear the guys out there putting forms in for concrete? Because they're doing that right now, which is really cool. All right. How are we going to start this?
No, we didn't start yet.
No. David and I both got on here, and you were not on here.
Yeah.
And we thought maybe you weren't coming, and we forgot because of Maker Central. And then you popped up, like, all of a sudden. So you're not at Maker Central
yet. Not at Maker Central. I will leave tomorrow afternoon. That'll be Thursday, and I'll be in UK for the weekend. This is going to be a fast trip for me because I have a lot of stuff going on here. In the past, I would have made it a bigger deal and spent some time before or after the show. But this time, I'm coming in, doing the show. I'm going to fly right into Birmingham. So I'll be right near the hotel complex. And then I'm going to leave. I think I leave on Monday morning. And I get back to the U.S. on Monday night. Quick trip.
I did that weekend trip one time. It's a lot.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, I got an empty notebook, head full of ideas. Isn't that a line in a song?
Should be, if it's not.
Sounds like a line. I think it's a line from a song. I got an empty notebook and a head full of ideas. And I plan on really doing a brain dump. I'm going to go very light. I'm a little nervous to travel in and out of the United States with what's going on. So I'm going to go very light. Not going to really carry too many things with me. I also have a couple of plane switcheroos. So that's another reason I go light. I don't want to have to track a bag. I'm just going to carry with what I have with me. But I always like traveling. I always have enjoyed traveling. But these days, as you get older, it's not quite as fun because there's more responsibilities tying you home. And of course, it's spring cleaning. I've been moving all my junk around the yard. I'm really trying to get the yard. This is tough. If you live in a rural area and you make things or you collect things, there's a fine line between having your yard look like your home and your junkyard. And I really put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure this place does not look like a junkyard. And it doesn't. It doesn't. You guys will be pleasantly surprised if you show up and you're like, wow, where's all this stuff? I have it all neatly organized on the gravel, which is deep in the woods. I have a whole big gravel pad out in the woods. And everything's somewhat organized down there. But now that the snow and the ice and the rain and somewhat subsided, I'm busy moving that golf cart that hasn't taken a charge in a year and moving the trailer that is not getting used unless it's getting used as an extra bedroom. When there's a lot of people here, some people are like, I want to sleep in a trailer. So you sleep in the trailer. So I'm reorganizing the whole junk pile. So that's really what I've been up to this week. And since I'm going away, I'm not really delving into any new videos. I do have enough footage for a new episode of the Cadillac conversion. So I'm going to jam it together today and see what I can come up with tonight. And if I can get an episode out, I'm going to put an episode out on the Cadillac. I think that would be part 3, maybe part 4. I put out part 8 of the house restoration, and that did pretty well. I replaced the entire floor.
That was very impressive.
Oh, did you get a chance to see some of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I try to put it through in my voiceover, but the agony and the denial of, like, what if I just level this instead of taking it out? I could just level this. And then it just was so bad. There's no option but to rip it out. And I came to that conclusion. And in the video, I ripped the floor completely out with my buddy Mike. And we put a new floor back in.
That's like the worst case scenario, right? Like, yeah. That's the last thing that you want to do.
Yeah. This doesn't have to be a topic this time, but it could be a topic, is what is your threshold of pain? And this house and some other restorations, including the car, my threshold of pain is now very high. I don't know what the proper term. Would it be high or very low? If I can take a lot of pain financially and emotionally, do I have a high threshold of pain? Is that what
it
is? Yeah. So I have an extremely high threshold of pain. Now I'm like, let's just rip the whole second floor out now. I've been through it. It doesn't matter. We don't need those. So my threshold of pain and agony when it comes to restoration projects is very high. I look at something now and I go, yeah, that whole thing's got to go. Let's just replace it. I went through it with my front porch in my house when I hired a couple of knuckleheads to start repairing it. And I was looking at it. I was like, this is amateur hour. I said, I went through like four carpenters before I realized the inevitable. I just have to do this myself because everyone's dilly-dallying around with the footings. And they're like, well, maybe if I do that, I'm like, you're one guy with a shovel. This needs like, I said, you know what? This whole entire thing has to get completely ripped off. And I made that conclusion by myself alone and turned it into a video series. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to rip the floor out. I didn't want to have to put tens of thousands of dollars into a handmade foundation, but I did it all. But at the end, it'll all look better.
Yeah.
So I have a high threshold of pain now. That's what I'm realizing. Yeah. Builds character.
I guess so.
It does not build your bank account, but it builds character.
Yeah. We're putting in a pool in our backyard, and it's taken a long time. This is May. We started it in January, and it's weather in the spring is tough, and so it just they'll get work done, and then they have to wait for 2 weeks for it to be
dry,
raining and dry out and whatever. And the last week or so, we've been waiting on concrete. It's really close to being finished. We've been waiting on concrete around the deck to do the deck for it. And Jenny is getting really irritated and frustrated and like, I don't understand why they're not here. Like, it's perfectly sunny day. It's been sunny for 2 days. I don't get why they're not here. And there's like logistics problems, I think. But I found myself being like, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Like, yeah, I'd like to have it done. But, and then I was talking to my neighbor about that and Jenny was sitting there being frustrated, rightfully so. But I was not. And I was like, why is this not bothering me so much? And then I remembered and I told him because my car sat in the shop for 2.5 years. And I got really used to just
very
like
high threshold.
It's fine. Threshold, it's fine. So it's a different threshold. But
is that car good, by the way? Is it a daily driver again?
It is.
Oh, good.
That's great.
There's some weird little like thing. I have to take it back at 1,000 miles, which I'm actually getting close to already, for them just to like, check the oil, make sure there's no metal bits or in, just kind of a whatever. But there's some weird little throttle thing that's inconsistent. I'll be driving around and then all of a sudden it feels like somebody has the gas line and they're like pinching it.
Mm.
And it's just like
starving for gas a little bit.
And then it'll go away. So I got to figure that out. But otherwise, yes, it's very good.
Sure.
It's nice.
Carburetor or a fuel injector?
Fuel injected. Yeah, and there's a million things it could be along that chain, but I want to have him look at it rather than me start trying to, dig it out and figure it out. Because he may know from putting it back together and having tested it a bunch of times, he may know right off.
So they may have it for a couple more years.
No, they're not. I'm going to tell them, here's the problem. Here's when I want to bring it in. You tell me when you have time to pay attention to it, and then I'll bring it in. That's the plan.
I had
I'm taking it to him for
my little green Chevy C10. I haven't flushed out the gas tank ever, but when I first got the car, it had sat for a really long time, and it would do that. It would sputter and stutter, and I realized it was the fuel filter. So I used to keep a bunch of fuel filters, and I'd use these clear ones. And when they turned rust, I'd switch them out, put a new one in, the car would run good until that one turned rusty again. Yeah,
that's kind of what I assume it is. That seems like the most logical thing because it's intermittent and the stuff inside the filter kind of gets knocked around and circulated and stuff. But before I go swapping parts, I'm just going to see what he says first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got an issue with the Impala that once in a while when you from a stop and you take off kind of fast, it starts to go and then it misses. And thought we had it figured out with a vacuum leak somewhere, and then it seemed to go away, but now it's back again. And it's very startling. Like, you'll be at a stop sign, and then you go, and then in the middle of the intersection, it feels like it's going to die. But then it just takes off again. And I can't get it to consistently repeat. So it's hard to show somebody.
Diagnose it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Yeah, I'm kind of having that same thing where I can't really show, I just can't show it off. When I've been driving lately, I've been keeping my phone like on the console in video mode. So as soon as it happens, I can just hit record to get the sound of the and I've only gotten like one video of it. So, cool. Well, David, you're not going to the UK.
I am not. Correct? No.
Cool. Ever?
Someday.
Just kidding.
Someday. Okay. Kelly keeps bringing it up.
Oh.
So we are working on the shop. We spent all day yesterday clearing it out, getting ready for the concrete leveling. And I'm an old man. I am sore. I usually go on a 30-minute walk every morning. I woke up today and I was like, nope, not today. So it has been quite the adventure. When you build something, it always has to fit through a doorway. So like, you know, you're building a table or a cabinet or whatever, it needs to fit through a doorway so you can get it in there.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm building shop furniture, I think this never has to leave the shop.
Oh no.
Whoops.
Luckily everything was able to leave the shop, but some things were very close or had to be tilted in a way. And I was like, oh yeah, here we are. Mm. So, and it's, I'm way more excited than I should be to have a level floor. Like this is, it feels like a new beginning. And the funny thing is it's all kind of temporary. So tomorrow the concrete people are coming in and they're going to do the thing where they inject foam, expanding foam underneath, and then try to get it as level as possible. But the original pour wasn't completely flat. So the plan has been to just put subfloor on top of that and wedges. But I think there's going to be a couple areas where it's going to take too many wedges. So I'm going to do a little bit of concrete leveling with the like a concrete mixture, but not the whole floor. I don't That sounds so awful. But just in the really bad areas, I'm gonna level it with concrete, feather it out, and then put the subfloor on top of that. The thing is, next week the contractor's coming over to start working on drawings for the shop expansion. And I know I said that I wasn't going to do the shop expansion, but I have decided if I don't plan on doing the shop extension, it'll never happen. So I'm taking step one.
Okay.
So I got the estimate and I thought the estimate was too much for right now. And I said that to the contractor and he's like, you know, that's just an estimate. We, you know, there are things we can remove. We can get more of a detailed number once we start doing the drawings. And then I just realized, let's just do the drawings are going to cost like $3,500, but that will go towards the construction. I figured let's just do the drawings right now. And then, you know, maybe a huge sponsor is going to swoop in and they're going to drop bags of money on me and I can start the shop extension. So
that's smart. Be prepared
I'm actually just I'm pretending that it's going to happen, not pretending. I'm planning that it's going to happen.
Moving
forward. And so leveling the floor is going to help because the current shop is then going to be the metal shop and once the expansion happens, and so I'll have a level floor when that happens, and thus the subfloor that's going in there will be able to get moved into the new shop. So it's not like I'm wasting a bunch of money. I'm actually getting prepared for the future. And this is all super exciting. It feels like, it feels like a new beginning to me.
Hmm.
Very cool.
Awesome. You never know. When you go to dig for the foundation for the shop extension, you might find like a treasure chest full of money to pay for the whole thing.
That is very, very possible.
I don't know about very, very possible, but it is possible.
Nope, I'm going with very, very possible.
Okay, sure. Fair enough.
Yeah. Two years ago, we had two big trees removed. One was rotting away that needed to be removed, and we just decided to remove both the trees because someday I'm going to do the extension, and that was step one. Step two is getting the drawings, and step three will be pouring the foundation. So we're just going to move forward. I feel like that's what Jimmy did.
Yeah, I just step at a time, what I could pay for.
One step at a time. So
one convenient thing for my project is, it was in the woods. So if it sat undone, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Versus if it was right near the house, then I would have to make sure it got done faster. But being in the woods and being a little obsessive, every couple of $10,000 I had, I threw at it just to make it move along.
Every couple of $10,000.
Did you ever see?
Hey, look! I found some over there.
Did you ever see that? There's a video that goes around every once in a while. Me and Patrick send it back and forth to each other, of a guy at a boatyard. And he's like, "Oh yeah, your outrigger's broken." He goes, "What's that going to cost?" He goes, "About $1,000." And then he goes, "You see over here, your fin's cracked. You're going to need." He goes, "Oh, what's that going to cost?" He goes, "About $1,000." And then everything on the boat is about $1,000. And with the building, everything is about $20,000. You want to do this? It's about $20,000. You want to put siding on? It's about $20,000. You want to put 10 windows in? It's about $20,000. And we made that joke. It's like, oh, you want to do this? It's about $20,000. You want to spray foam the inside? It's about $20,000. That's what it turned out to be.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And expensive.
My threshold for pain. The pain is over now.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm doing the horse barn, and the plumber comes in and he's like, this, that, and the other thing. I was just like, yeah, just do it. He's like, hey, you okay with that? I'm like, yeah, it has to get done, right? Like, do you want me to pay half? He's like, no, like, you can. You got to pay the whole thing. I'm like, then just do it. Okay. What are you going to do? Well,
there's a very stubborn part of me that I don't want to get a loan for it. So I spent my 20s and 30s just buried in debt. Terrible credit. Horrible money management because I didn't care. And then I spent my 40s fixing that, thanks to Kelly mostly, and like getting out of debt, getting out of collection, and my jobs started to get better. You know, like I was moving up in the agency, and then the YouTube thing took off, and I was like a decent job with decent income, and I am finally out of debt. You know, it's been a number of years now, at least 10 years, where I was out of collection, and I got my credit score back up, and my only loans right now are two mortgages, and a lease on a car. And it just feels good. No credit card debt. And so I don't want to go back into debt. So there's a real stubborn part of me of like, I've lived that life. Now I need to just make the money to make it happen.
And that's why I did. I basically considered the long-term paying for it basically like a debt. So I couldn't pay, say, $350,000 at once, but I could pay it a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom from experience of getting out of debt and then having that stubborn desire to stay out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I mean, I went through that as well. You know, even when our kids were young, I was in the process of getting rid of all of that credit card debt and stuff from being, you know, in college and being single and being newly married and trying to figure out how to, you know, have a life together and stuff. And yeah, once you get out of that, there's a lot of motivation not to get back there. It sucks. Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how the shop stuff. I mean, I know it's going to end up kind of looking the same.
Yep. It's going to look the same,
which is weird, you know, but I'm excited to see it not be a problem anymore for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like not one less thing to have to work around. You just get
I'm really good at replacing one problem with another. So I haven't figured out what the next problem is yet.
You'll find it, I'm sure. Yeah. Cool. Well, I have been doing far less interesting things than you guys. I've been cleaning my office. This corner back here, which I don't know if you guys can even see, had piles of stuff in it. The piles have now moved over a little bit, and they're smaller. But the point is that this corner is now organized. I built like a Lego organizer thing for all of my Legos. My kids are all upstairs. And I've been trying to just kind of get the room in shape and get it so that there's all these things that I want to be able to like relax and do, or like play music and, you know, build models and stuff like and build Legos and stuff. So I'm trying to make spaces to do those things and not always have to move things out of the way to, you know, like have a hobby. So I built an organizer over there, and it was really simple. It's just like plastic containers and, you know, storage bins and stuff. But then I wanted to be able to label them. And so I made a really simple, it's amazing how simple things can become once you can think of them and then model them. Like having the 3D modeling capability, and I know I kind of preach this, but like once that's a skill that you can just kind of knock things out, it opens up a huge world of simple possibilities that can happen really quickly. It took me about a minute and a half to model a little label holder that is the, I mean, it has a slit in the top of it. It has a window in the front of it so you can drop in a piece of paper with a label, but it's printed in two pieces that snap together and they can be printed flat. So there's no supports. They take like 2 minutes to print and it's parametric. So if you want a different size, you just type in two numbers in it. And it just changes the size. And so you can make any label holder for anything that you want. And then, you know, you just cut paper labels to drop into them. And that took minutes to do and minutes to print. Mm. But something like that can make like entire area of storage way more usable, whether it's like this type of storage or in a storage room, you know, on boxes or whatever, bins in a shop. So it's weird that that stuff gets me so excited. It's like building skill over time, building experience over time with something makes simple things fast and easy, which are not impressive, but it's like gratifying, I guess. Right. It's not impressive to show, like, look, I made a label holder, but it's gratifying because I was able to do that quickly, and now it's like flexible, and I can, you know. Anyway, so I did that, and then modeled and designed a little like parts separator. And I think it's version one, but it's a circular. Here, I'll show it to you. It's a circular bin with like a bowl in the middle. And so you dump parts in here, and then each one of these little openings in the side go to a separate removable parts bin. And so you can dump things in here, and then you just like flick them out to the right separator, and then you take the separator and you dump it in a bigger container. So for like different size screws or bolts or nuts or whatever. And then this this center bowl thing actually comes out, and then on the inside of it there's the storage. So as you're getting all those extra screws and nuts and stuff, you just drop them in here, you store them down in here, and then when you're ready to separate them, you pour them into this bowl, separate them out into the different things.
Oh, that's cool.
That's a really satisfying project. There's multiple prints there in different colors. I was looking at, I was watching your previous video where you're making the tool holder, and you see, you know, I've seen 3D printed organizers and tool holders before, but you printed in multicolor, and it just set it off to look so much more beautiful and just satisfying to look at. And I immediately was like, I want to start doing that. I just love that look.
Well, I found that my tendency would be to just print like everything in black, I think, right, or gray or something. But that's really bad for video, because even this thing, you can't tell the fact that this bowl in the center and
yeah, they don't look like individual
it,
parts.
Exactly. Like you can't tell that those are separate. And so I should have actually made this center piece a different color, but I made the, you know, the bins orange so that they're set off. You can tell they're individual. They pull out. And I also figured out, feel free to use this, anybody, that when you're iterating through something in a video that takes multiple 3D prints, print them in different colors along the way so that you can show version one and it's white, you know, and then you talk about the problems or whatever, and then you show version two and it's a different color. You can clearly see this is an upgrade from this, or it's a the next whatever of this. And so something as simple as just swapping color on the 3D printer, which is kind of a pain, but you're right, it makes a project look more intentional and it shows progress over time. So those are the types of things that I've been like you know, kind of working into the 3D printing videos. And I'm doing more and more of that type of thing, and I really enjoy it, and I don't think it's very interesting for other people. So I'm not sure. Like, people do enjoy the problem-solving aspect of those and, like, talking about process and stuff. People do like that. But there's still something... there's still something, like, right here about it. You know, it's... I'm making this thing, and it fits right here. And so the people that are used to, you know, making that giant cabinet right there, or making this big desk, and then you have several videos where you're making this little utility kind of thing that can fit in your hand, or it goes behind something or under something, it's harder to get the coolness of the process of something small across when the final, you know, like the final beauty shot thing is not a bigger, bolder piece. And so that's, I'm trying to figure that out. I'm trying to figure out how to balance between the small and the large. I came across, have you ever heard the quote about the two wolves?
No.
So I can't remember where this is from. So I apologize to anybody that knows. But there's a saying, or like a parable or something, about there are two wolves inside me. And it talks about one wolf being good and one wolf being bad. And the whole idea is that, like, there's duality in us, and we have good and we have bad, and we have to constantly fight between the two, and, you know, whatever. But I was thinking about that. I saw that quote somewhere a while back, and it's just kind of stuck in my head. And then I was thinking about that in other contexts, not necessarily good, bad, but the two opposing forces in us about all things. And so, and this, the project example is one of those things. I enjoy making small, useful things that can do, you know, that, like, I'm surrounded by them. They're all over my desk. They're like these little solutions.
At purpose.
But they're, yeah, but they're not a large cabinet that is, that has like a spectacle built into it. You know, that is like, that has a thing, that has a flash, that has a get somebody's attention on YouTube. And so there's these two wolves in that case for me are, I want it to be useful and discreet. And then the other thing is, but I have to get people to watch it. And so it has to have a thing. It has to have a spectacle, you know. And the more I started thinking about that, like, that's probably a big topic by itself, because everything we do that is forward-facing, well, not everything. For me, there's a lot of things that I do that are forward-facing that have that kind of two-wolf mentality. You know, I want it to be this, but it also has to be this, and those are a little bit opposite. Mm-hmm. And how do you find that, the place where you're happy with what you're doing and you feel fulfilled, but it also can get enough attention to be worthwhile, you know? Hey. So anyway, that's one of those things I've been thinking about.
I have been doing a lot of 3D printing lately just for personal stuff off camera. And I just posted a link in the chat. So Philips, the like Philips.
Oh, I saw this.
Razors. Yeah. They are now, you can, if you lose a part to your razor or whatever, you can just download the file and 3D print it. I posted the video to this, which I think is fantastic. And it's so obvious. I don't know why other companies haven't done this. So the marketing behind this, and whether they're doing it just to get attention or they're doing it for actual good, I don't care. But the marketing behind this is you don't throw away your old razor, you just replace the parts with your 3D printer, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, that is really smart. And the cool thing about that ad that they show is it's like a little razor, like a mustache razor or something. And I have that one, that same one. And so as soon as I saw the picture, I'm like, oh, awesome. Yeah. I will actively need that thing. That's cool.
And the and since I've been doing more 3D printing lately, I've been, I don't know, like, I have failed prints or I have test prints, and I'm like, what do I do with all these things? So I put down a deposit for this company called Loop. It's the world's first desktop 3D filament maker. So you collect all your prints.
Oh, no way.
You throw them in this thing, and it chops them up into little bits, it melts it, and then puts it onto a spool so you can reuse the filament. And
That's wild.
they announced this a while ago, and then I saw that announcement, and then I saw some like, this is fake. I've seen people try to make this on YouTube, and it always fails. And they recently put out a video of like real time, no cuts. Like, here's our machine. It actually does the thing that it says it's going to do. And
Wow.
so I put down my $100 deposit. It's supposed to come out of manufacturing this summer. And I'm excited about it because I don't want to keep throwing, I don't want to throw away 3D prints. I want to make use. And I use 99% of what I use is all PLA. So I just collect PLA and I'm going to throw it in this bin and chop it up and make new prints. Of course, it's going to mix all the colors, but a lot of the things that I make don't need to be seen. They're drawer organizers or whatever. So it
Yeah.
looks really cool.
That's really
I
cool.
started following them when when that first got announced, and I got on the list because it seemed like, yeah, this would be a thing that would be, I don't know if smart is the right word, but like responsible. Like, as much
Yeah.
as I print, it'd be responsible to
It's
start
also
trying to
really
figure out a
cool
way
to
to.
watch a transformation.
Yeah,
It's
but
certainly
then when I saw the
recyclable, but there's
price of it,
something really cool about it. How much is
I was
it?
like, it's like $2,500 or something, isn't it?
I think the early adopters, it's going to be 1,500 bucks.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that's worth. Well, anyway, but I'm excited to see if that actually works. That is really cool. Yeah. So anyway, I've just been 3D printing and cleaning and, doing that type of stuff. David, you had a topic, or didn't we have a topic? We
Yeah,
did have a
so
topic.
I wanted to talk about perspective. So I've been complaining about my shop floor for a long time, how it's just crazy uneven. And then yesterday, when we got nearly all the stuff moved out of the shop, it didn't feel so bad. And I was like, I had this understanding of why I initially did not choose to have the floor leveled and flat and fixed. But once you get all the tools in there, and then now there are lanes, there's little walkways in the shop between the bench and the table saw. You focus more on one area and you feel that this isn't flat. And then I can see the shop furniture where the levelers are down a quarter inch on one side and 2 inches on another side. And I didn't know somewhere there's a topic in perception when you look at the big picture or when you focus in on something. And Jimmy mentioned something about, I always think I can do all of this in a certain amount of time. And I was like, oh my gosh, I relate to that so
My
like
perception is my
hardcore.
to-do
Yeah.
list. My to-do list is usually doable. That's my perception, often.
I think we pick and choose, but sometimes we can do so much more than we think we can, and sometimes we can't do as much as we think we can. And I don't know where we go from here, but maybe we can talk about perception.
I'll tell you a funny story. My business partner from a long time ago, my business partner Wayne, he would always say, perception is reality. And honestly, I've been spending the last 25, 30 years trying to figure out what exactly he means. Perception is reality. And what he was implying, and I'm not sure 100% what he would imply. I actually remember asking him to explain this a couple of times and I never got a clear answer, but perception is reality. For instance, people perceive that I might be a millionaire. So that's the reality, that I am a millionaire. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not. No, but people perceive that. Maybe I am in, assets, but I'm not liquid. But he's like, well, so it's true. So people perceive that. Like when I used to drive in the city, I had a Mercedes sedan years ago. I had a SEL four-door sedan. In the early 2000s, and it was a 91, but it was still the type of car that people are like, whoa, you got money. I'm like, I don't have money. It's like a $20,000 used car. And that's what Wayne would always say, perception is reality. So people perceive that I own 30 houses in East Durham. So I own 30 houses in East Durham. I don't. I own two. So That's why this is a bad example, because I still don't know exactly what that means. What does it mean to you guys if somebody says perception is reality?
I mean,
it's like,
go ahead, David.
False assumption, really, is what it means. Perception is a false assumption.
When I hear that, it relates so much to like the famous Henry Ford quote, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. And I, self-perception, whether I think, so if I think I'm an artist, I'm an artist, where I didn't used to think I was an artist, and so I wasn't. And I think in the way one person looks at something is going to be different than the way another person looks at something. So I feel like what is reality and what is my reality, those lines are getting more blurred over time, because I feel like I am making up my own reality and it feels real to me. I am, I'm this YouTube star. I'm an artist. I create masterful pieces of fine furniture. Somebody else might not think that, but as long as I think that, that's great. That's motivating for me.
Yeah, I would agree with you on it being like, there's a difference between whose perspective you're talking about. Perception does not equal truth. And I will stand by that till the day I die.
Yeah, that's why I would kind of argue with Wayne all the time. I'd be like, I don't know exactly what you mean.
But at the same time, so if you're talking about yourself, if I'm talking about myself and I perceive myself as, let's not say millionaire, let's say wealthy.
Right.
Then I'm wealthy, because right. My threshold for what wealth is based on how my life is right now. I'm wealthy because I have 4 healthy kids. I'm wealthy because I get to do my own thing, you know.
And the reason I use those examples is because Wayne was always like wrapped up in money. I mean, not,
and
I
think
love
that's,
Wayne, but
yeah,
you'd always like, he was always talking about that as a topic.
Yeah. And I think there's, you know, there's empirical evidence to say that you are not a liquid millionaire and I am not a liquid millionaire. And so I don't think you can perceive that that's true when it's not actually true. I do think that there is definitive truth in the world that is different from the way that we perceive the world, but we see things through our own eyes and through our own experiences. And so we can decide how we feel about them and what we choose to do about them based on our perception. So from that perspective, it is reality in that I have decided to see the world this way, and that will influence my choices and my actions and my reactions. And so, I mean, I kind of get both sides of that, you know, I disagree and agree with it depending on the perspective.
You might say perception is reality from an advertising point of view. When you're trying to do trickery, basically, or deception.
Mm. Yeah. But I think it, as far as, like,
perception.
Back to David's, like, original thing about, like,
rap lyrics.
About, you know, like, the perspective of your space being different or something like that. One thing I don't remember where I saw this, but one thing that's always kind of stuck out to me is the whole, like, zooming in. So think about like Google Earth, right? So you're looking at the Earth and you see the big general shapes of the continents and the oceans and stuff. And then as you start to zoom in, you see a little bit more detail about some of the topography. And then as you zoom in a little bit more, you start to see, oh, there's a city right there. And as you zoom in more, you start to see, oh, there are buildings and there are streets. And as you go in, you just keep going in and you keep going in, you get more detail down to like street level, where you are standing on a corner looking at a person walking down a street. It's all the same scene. It's all the same thing. But there's no way at that top level perspective that you could possibly see the detail on the other end. And there's no way on the street level that you could get an idea of how big everything actually is. You can't see the earth, right? But it's all the same. It's the same moment. It's the same space. It's all the same. And so the evidence of where you are at any given time is the details that you see. And so if there's nothing in your shop, there are no details. So you don't have evidence that the floor is actually slanted. as soon as you start to add details, then you can feel you have evidence that the floor is not flat and you need to change it, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's the same thing with YouTube stuff. Like, people think that YouTube is good or bad or easy or hard or whatever their perspective is. And that's probably because they don't have the details. And we have a different perspective on it because we have the minutia of, yes, I have to hit upload and I have to make sure I put in the tags and I have to make sure that the thumbnail has an A/B test. And I, you know, we have those details to prove whether we like it or not, or whether it's easy or not, or whatever. And, so anytime something feels like your week ahead is like, ah, I got this, I could do all these things, that probably means that you haven't defined enough detail about the things that you need to do. That's what I do. If I have a 4-item list and I'm like, oh yeah, this is cake, I need to make that list a lot more detailed to be realistic, you know?
Logistics play a big part in that too. When you have a to-do list, going to get materials and not planning on not having a part, no plan to not have the part, then you got to add that to the plan and go get the part. Like, the perception that I can do plumbing in one afternoon is ridiculous. You gotta plan 6 trips to Home Depot and bags of sample parts. Yeah.
Yep.
So many times I will think a job or a series of jobs is bigger than what it actually is, though. And I might put that off because it's like, ugh, that's so much stuff. And then I find that when it comes time to do the work and I just write down what I need to do, I'm like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I just need to do these 4 things. So it's just crazy how it works both ways.
Mm-hmm. But there again, that's evidence. Those are details, right? That prove that it is or it isn't hard.
And
yeah. I saw another, this is kind of related, it's not the same thing, but I saw Drew Witt posted something the other day and it was a quote from someone else, and I don't remember who it was, but it said, you don't need more hours, you need more focus, or something like that.
Mm.
And I got to thinking about that because I often will get frustrated when, you know, an afternoon gets away from me and I feel like I haven't really accomplished anything. And when I look back at those days, it turns out I did accomplish stuff. But it's a lot of like little, you know, I paid the doctor bill and I sent the thing and I packed the order and it's just like a bunch of little things that had to get done. But there was not a lot of focus there. It was not a lot of concerted effort on a single thing to really see it move forward. It was just like, you know, tidying up. And that's one of the things that when I look at my week and I have those like list of 4 things that don't actually get done, it's often because I'm not focused enough on those 4 things. I get distracted by the extra things on the desk that didn't get taken care of last week or whatever. Anyway, that is maybe not related, but I liked that quote. It gave me a, you know, something to remind myself that I should just focus a little bit more.
I see sometimes like, you know, you see so many silly quotes on failure is just part of the journey and makes you better. Like, I see all these quotes and I just like roll my eyes. I'm like, oh, I'm so sick of quotes. And then one hits me and I'm like, oh yeah. And like that spoke to me and I write it down or store it in the memory banks and realize I shouldn't be rolling my eyes every time I see this because it means something to somebody somewhere.
Yeah. Again, perspective, whatever is
right,
the current problem, you know, like with you, like things are going to stick out in a way that are helpful or not helpful, depending on what you're in the middle of, you know.
Yeah.
Usually. Any other thoughts on that, on like the perspective thing? Has that caused you a problem anywhere or is it just something you noticed?
Are you talking about perspective in general or the shop?
Well, yeah, like how you perceive something, like your shop, you perceived it one way, but it was actually...
I think it's I don't know about a problem, but it has caused barriers and things to be put off. Like, shop expansion. Like, that's way too big for me to worry about right now. So I'll just keep putting it off and keep filling up the space that I have. And maybe it's not, I mean, there's a money barrier, of course, but maybe it's not, maybe that money barrier is just mental. You know, I haven't made any new plans in a while. I haven't made any viral videos or hit videos in a while. Maybe if I focused a little bit on some business. I've taken a step back from the business and tried to work more on the artsy side of what I do. Maybe that's my barrier. So I just gotta just push the business. You know, I think everything comes and goes in waves. There's like a Nirvana song, like a heavy chorus and quiet verse. And I think I kind of treat my business like that, you know, like all in on money making stuff and then all in on looks and feel and wants. So, I
Well, you
don't know.
look great.
Thank you. Thank you.
I
It's
know that's
because
not
of
what
my
you meant,
new
but
Phillips razor that I got. I just
no.
3D printed some new heads and
Sponsored by.
shaved. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish.
I always perceive that I have the money to do something. I don't want to be obsessive about money in this conversation, but the idea I could perceive like, oh, I could restore this house, for instance. And then it gets right down to it. And my plan all along is I perceive that I could take this house and take it to a finish. But reality is that I have to really take it slow because I don't have the money to hire a team or, I mean, even Howard said, he goes, let's get the house to a certain point and then maybe we just hire the guys to do the complete interior with a good plan. I was like, maybe we do that. But that would be another financial thing we'd have to tackle. But in general, the idea is that I could take it a little bit at a time and do it. The funny, if you guys watch the latest video, there's a funny dynamic between me and Mike. Mike is my assistant on the house. He's become my de facto carpenter assistant on the house, and he's very experienced with construction, and so I defer to him a lot. And the funny thing is when I first showed him the house, my perception was, this is going to be a beautiful house. His perception was, he goes, you bought this already? I go, yeah, I already own it. And he goes, woof, woof. He made a face like that. I go, anything can be fixed. He goes, ah. He goes, I don't know, bro. I don't know. This is a disaster. I was like, I go, stop for a minute and look at the like. It's gonna be a beautiful farmhouse. It's gonna be an open floor here. And he's like, if you say so. That's what he says like that.
I
To the
think
whole
one of
time.
your
The whole time
one
we're
of
working on the house, he's muttering to himself the whole time that, like, I can't believe we're doing this. But go ahead there.
You have this amazing skill, way so much more than me, of seeing a bigger picture in something and
Yeah,
not
I
worrying
really
about
do.
time. Like you'll buy a house, you'll buy a car, knowing that it's going to take years to get it to its end goal. And
Yeah.
I seem to focus more on, I just want to, I'm going to build this little overly engineered, beautiful trash can, and I'm going to spend the next 2 weeks making a trash can.
But you know, it's funny. I do need that. I do need that hit as well. And I do mix it. And we've talked about this before. I have these long-term projects, like the horse barn, for instance, which is finally getting a heating system installed, and then eventually the sewage system. So these long-term projects are always going on in the background, but I do need that satisfaction hit of like making a street address for the house on the plasma cutter. I have this like instant idea and I go and I do it and it, or whatever it is, even if it's just a 1 week build, like my side table that I recently built. So I do get that hit, which I totally need. But at the same time, I do have a developed patience level for building a boat or building a canoe. You know, this again, it's my threshold of pain has just gotten higher and
Yeah.
higher and higher. And my threshold of devoting 100 square feet of floor space to something or 200 square feet of floor space to this car, for instance, and being like, it's just a matter of time before it's out of here. It's just a matter of time. And every day I add a little bit, another strip. What I've been doing, and I'll send you guys a picture, is as I work on the car, the next phase reveals itself. I don't have a really solid plan. I know what I want it to look like, and as these different bits and pieces start presenting themselves, I concentrate on it. So now I'm laminating strips of Douglas fir over the fenders to build up that one part on the fender. I'll show you guys a quick picture. of what that piece is. And so that's becoming my next defining step. And every day I'm adding a little bit. I'm showing you guys a picture of ChatGPT image. You see this strip of wood that hugs the fender. That piece of wood is what I'm building up next. So every day, just like a canoe strip, I'm adding another piece to it. And it's building up. I'm showing you here these pieces on the fender there, strips of wood. Now it's about almost close to 2 inches thick now. I've added strips every day. And every
How
day,
thick are like, the strips?
They're thin. They're eighth of an inch to make the bend, because it's a really severe bend on one end, a much gradual one on the other. And I snapped a few of them trying to get them. I'm trying not to steam bend them because it just takes too much time. If you cut them thin enough and glue enough of them on, you could forego the whole idea of steam bending them.
I have learned, and I didn't know this, and maybe this will help somebody else out there. Bending wood, it's not about the moisture, about the steam. It's about the heat. This is something I learned from Nick from Workshop Companion. It's so the moisture helps, but it's more about heating the wood. And so guitar makers, like somebody making an acoustic guitar, they'll wet the wood just to help it, give it a little bit of stretchiness, but the heat that they're applying to it over the I bought one of these guitar I don't know what it's called, but it's a metal post and it gets super hot. And so you
wrap around it like a metal post.
Yeah. So if you're finding something that has the potential of splitting when you're putting it on there, just spritz it with a little bit of water, take the heat gun to it.
And that's a great idea. I'm going to try that right away. I'm cutting them thin enough where they go, but once in a while, the grain pattern, it will snap or split across the grain pattern. But I'm able to just push it all back together. So once it's all laminated, the crack will be disguised. But no, that's a good point. So I forget my longer point, but the idea is that I have these, I get my hits. I get my fix. I don't want to say dopamine hit. I hate hearing that. You hear that on podcasts all the time. I get my fix.
Yeah.
By doing these small projects.
Yeah, the little satisfaction of completing something. And like when Bob talks about making these 3D printed projects that are just sitting around his desk, but it makes him feel good. Like, I totally feel that. When somebody else is talks about their satisfaction of doing something, I can absolutely relate to that, because I love the little projects. I love the, like, this just took me a few days and now I have this thing forever that feels so good.
And I mean, I would like to do more of those, because it feels, I don't know, I would like to do, how do I say this? So I have the Ghia running in the background all the time, but I don't get to it very often. I would like to have an active long-term project in the background that I'm constantly chipping away at, but then those little short things happen more often, you know, happen on every couple of week basis. But I feel like those, even though they're satisfying for me, they're maybe not interesting. And this is back to the two wolves thing again. They're not interesting enough for like the public or the people that are watching to keep doing that on a regular basis, you know? And maybe that's just about production value or just about persona. I don't have any idea. But
it's super hard to put into a video the emotional response that you have about something. And it's easy to show like a reaction, but sometimes our emotional response to making a project isn't a instant reaction. It's the whole journey over the whole thing. That's the feeling we're really going for. It's not the dopamine hit. It's the it's the journey hit, whatever the phrase for that, whatever long-term dopamine is. Happiness.
Dopamine. The dopamine hit.
Yeah, and now that we're talking about this, I'm realizing that I do... What?
I just remember, I'll tell you after, it's a non sequitur, but I'll just remembered something funny.
I'm realizing that I enjoy, it's not even enjoy, the subtlety of something being done well and useful is way more interesting to me than it being visible. And that might be a real problem. You know what I mean?
You're saying projects are more utilitarian than sexy and styly.
Yeah. And I think I appreciate that. Like this, I'm looking at my camera. You can see me looking at the camera. Yeah. That camera is on the adjustable webcam mount thing that I made. It literally cannot be on camera because it is holding the camera. Right? So I can't show it off. I mean, I have, but that is one of my favorite things because I made a product to solve a problem for me. And it works super well. And this is version 2 of it. And it works even better. And it works on more screens and more cameras and all this stuff. But like, I can't show that off. And there's nothing like whiz bang about it that's going to be like, hey, everybody, I've got the brand new webcam holder. You know what I mean? Look, I dug up my driveway and put an underground bunker underneath my house. It's not that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But this type of thing is so much more satisfying to me. And that makes for terrible YouTube. That makes for terrible like social media, you know?
Not necessarily, because what you're doing is you're focusing on the design problem solution aspect of it, which is
right. Yeah. And I'm not saying that like boohoo me. I don't mean that. Yeah. It becomes really difficult to figure out how to translate what excited me about this thing that I'm pointing at them, put my hands around to everybody else. Yeah. See what I mean?
Like, and you've already made the video or the two videos on that, but you're still feeling that goodness and that satisfaction because you're looking at it right now and like, I freaking made that. How do I put that in a past video that every day I look at this thing and it makes me feel good?
Yeah.
That's when you put a fake thumbnail of like a girl in a bikini. You go, I think I've solved the problem. And then remember there was like used to be all these fake thumbnails all the time, and then I think YouTube cracked down on it. You weren't allowed to put a thumbnail that didn't associate with what the video was about.
I think you can, but I think it'll just get crushed by the algorithm pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, the thumbnails are like one of the biggest problems for me is I just don't know how to.
I just stop caring. Yeah. I can't figure it out.
I can't figure it out either.
Anyway. Drew started building a building, and so I was like, that's it. That's the end of my thumbnails. Drew's busy.
Yeah. Drew's busy. He can't do our thumbnails for us anymore. Well, any other thoughts on this stuff?
Perception. Anyone? Perception is reality? Sometimes. Maybe? I don't know. I still don't know the answer. I don't know. What does it mean to you? Put it in the comments below.
There you go. All right,
maybe the answer is for us to keep searching for the answer.
Oh. There is no spoon. Whoa, man.
That's heavy.
Cool.
I remember what made me giggle while we were talking, because when you hear, for some reason, you hear podcasters say dopamine hit all the time, and it drives me bananas. But it reminded me of this funny bit I saw on Instagram the other day, where as a guy, he was complaining to his landlord about noise he keeps hearing in the apartment. And while they're there with the land, I think it was a British skit, if that identifies it to anybody who might have seen it. And the guy goes, oh, I think we found it. And he pulls back a curtain, and it's just like two guys doing a podcast at a little round table with earmuffs on and a microphone. Like, podcasters. Ah, that's it. That's the problem. Like, come on, get up, get out, get out. As if they were rodents in the wall. It was two guys doing a podcast, and they were talking about like, yeah, man, the dopamine hit and the whatever podcast is. Yeah. Crypto, whatever. He's like...
Dopamine crypto.
I don't even talk like to people who don't
bro
have a podcast.
Yeah, he's like bro podcast. It become like rodents in this guy's apartment.
That's funny. Anyway,
that was funny.
Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. Huge thanks to everybody over there that supports the show, that makes it happen. We are grateful, very very grateful for you all.
Thank you.
Especially our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks. I gotta switch this list up.
I'm gonna post to my Patreon while you do that. I just forgot.
It always comes up in the same order, and it just, you know, it's like a default order. But anyway, there's nothing to do with the order. We're grateful for all of you. Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leathergood, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnau, and a pretty big deal. But also people like, let me see, James Winger. James has been supporting the show for a long time. Since 2018. Wow. Thank you, James. There's a lot of people that support us at all different levels, and they all get the after show. And we are grateful for every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Very grateful. The after show is usually where we talk about stuff that's secret or upcoming or disconnected from whatever we talked about on the show. Mm-hmm. It's usually 15, 20 minutes of mm-hmm. more show. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy does that a mm-hmm. lot. It's a podcast feed that you can get, put in your podcast player. You get it through Patreon. So you have to go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up to support the show at any level. And then up in the top right, I believe, there's the RSS feed. You can put it in your player. You get that show after this. There's also video for the after show, which is on the YouTube channel. It is linked from the Patreon post. So if you want to see video of the after show or hear audio, we got you covered. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's also video of the main show. We never talk about that, but there is a YouTube channel for this podcast, and you can see us. That's something that you feel like you need to do. You can see us. Or you can like turn it on and then cover us with another window. Also works. Anyway, cool. Do you guys got anything to recommend?
I do. Did you guys see? I'm really big fan of Mercedes. Obviously, I've been playing around with my Mercedes now that the spring is out. I have a 1998 Mercedes SL500, which is to me really a sexy sports car. Now I want to get the previous body style. I don't know these numbers, but the previous body style, and then the previous body style to that. So I want to get a 60s. Early 70s, and then I want to get a 70s, 80s, early 90s. I want to get one in each body style. But what I would really love is the Gullwing, the aluminum Gullwing. There's only 29 of them, and that one that got sold at auction, Jay Leno did a review on it. It's great. It's a 1955 Gullwing made in aluminum. There's only 30 of them, and it recently sold at auction for $10 million.
And you Jay start Leno throwing $20,000 at a time at that.
And Jay Leno's, he's really done such great things for the antique car enthusiast business. And his channel is amazing. He does like a very practical talk through. He constantly drops pearls of wisdom and historical facts about the car business. And it's a great walkthrough. And the car is unrestored at the moment. It's a really, he said the guy might not restore it. He said maybe he'll just take it apart and clean it, put it back together. The car is in really good shape. The owner bought the car, I should put it this way. The guy who had the car for the last 60 years bought it in 1970 for $30,000 and just sold it. Well, the family, wow. He's passed on. The family just sold it for $10 million.
That's quite an investment right there.
Insane. And I think in 1955, Mercedes made 29 in aluminum. There are still plenty in steel. It's a still very highly collectible car. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars, even in the particular regular model. Anyway, Gullwing, that would be a cool car to have and play with, but I would never be able to get my hands on one of those. My perception is I won't be able to, but reality.
The reality is you won't be able to.
My perception of you is that you're a millionaire, so you'll just get one.
Yeah, that's right. No problem. I'm not a ten millionaire.
Not a 10 millionaire. Cool, so, David. What you got?
I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this channel before. It's called Posey, and since the last time I've mentioned them, his channel has grown quite a bit. He makes absolutely just beautiful videos about a very precise little subject. And this one, the video is called Lamps, and it's about light bulbs, and it kind of goes over like the history of light bulbs, but he does it in such a artful, beautiful way. And he's got this amazing voice that's just so soothing. He makes fantastic videos. So it's about light bulbs and their color and their looks and how you use them. It's so good.
I'll check that out. All right, so I have two, and one of them is just something that everybody should see, whether you need to or not. It's a rap video from the 80s by Mr. T called Treat Your Mother Right.
Oh, I saw that. Okay. I saw
that. And, you know, Mother's Day was recently, and it's something that we bring up every year. And we sent it around to some friends who had never seen it, and that was pretty fun. I'll put a link to that. The other thing is a new show that is, I think, just going to be on digital. You know, Mike Rowe, who did, like, Dirty Jobs and stuff? Mm-hmm. He's doing a new show called, I think it's called People You Should Know. Let me find the title of it. People You Should Meet. People You Should Know. And basically him and his crew go around to people that are doing good work somewhere, you know, who are investing in their community or taking care of people or whatever. And they do like a little show about what the person's doing. And then they surprise them at the end with money or support to help. You know, and it's like, it's all sorts of stuff. They're doing soup kitchens, and they're like training people who are getting out of jail or rehab or something. That, you know, watch the trailer. It's a trailer for a show that's not out yet, but I like the no nonsense way that he covers his subjects. I think I don't know anything about him personally, so I'm not, you know, but it just looks like a good way to show off people who do good things. So
nice.
Go check that out. Yeah. You guys got anything else?
No.
No.
Oh, I guess I could say that I'm going to be at Maker Central. If you're going to be in England, Europe, this coming weekend, I will be at Maker Central. If today is Friday, I should be there, hopefully. And also at the end of the month, I'm going to the Maker event at Weaver Leather. Go to the Weaver website, May 29th and 30th. I'll be there. Some other people will be there.
Cool.
I'll be doing
pewter demos.
How to cast things in pewter. Pewter.
Computer. Cool. Right on. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
I'll be there. Bye.